Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row. Welcome to the Sunday Rub.
For McDonald's Gourmet Creations.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, she's a very, very wet MCG. Robbo's just showing me the radar. It's days you wake up and think on a day like today, by G, I'm glad I'm not sitting on the boundary. Massive game coming your way today. Carlton are taking on the Essendon Football Club and a huge lineup, guests galore. Sean Grigg from the Richmond Football Club. Can his man Dusty go on and win the Brownlow? Peter Schwab to explain exactly what is happening in the world of umpires. The number one player in the competition. The Brownlow medalist, if you don't mind. Paddy Dangerfield will be joining us. Jay-Z's Big Three. Xavier Campbell from the Essendon Football Club. Roosie's story, which is a bit like Rudyard Kipling when he just sits back and takes his way back. This time it's Fitzroy in 1986. And the new internet slash radio sensation, the Back to School Quiz, which was panned last week. And then it got up and got the three votes. It was very, very effective. I look around this box and it's just beautiful to be here on a Sunday with these wonderful, intelligent, good-looking men. I start with you, Wayne Schwartz. Pretty wet out there, Guru.
It is. It's going to be a wet day. Looking forward to seeing how the Bombers and the Blues handle the conditions. Bad kicking is bad footy, and that cost Melbourne last night. Howie?
Jay-Z coming today, all rugged up. He's got his hat on, but there's all sorts of ideas sprouting out of your head today, young man.
Oh, I need the jacket today, the big woolly one too. Hey, took my son, my three-year-old, to the footy for his first game yesterday, Howie. Watch Richmond likes Tigers, so he goes for the Tigers.
First game?
Yeah, for his first game. And I was wondering about what number, what Richmond player should I get for his Richmond jumper? I think it might be Daniel Rioli, number 17. He was sensational yesterday.
He
loved this man.
Absolutely brilliant. And a man who's obviously had a problem with his washing machine and shrunk all his tops, Wayne Carey, has come in. Hello, Ducky boy.
G'day, gentlemen, listeners. How are we?
Great to see you. And a man that was mentioned in a press conference, possibly, which we'll get to a little bit later on, Paul Roos, the super coach, the Zen Master, is here. Hello, Roosy.
Yes, I'm very well. Did you ask me? No, you didn't actually ask me. That wasn't very nice of you.
Well, how are you?
Good round of footy. Another few upsets too.
A lot of upsets.
I think we thought going into the season, Ducker was going to be an even season. We've seen that already, haven't
Absolutely.
We? So some terrific footy, and it's hard to pick in your tipping contest, isn't it?
We call you the Zen Master. Do you wake up in the morning and face east and do some yoga-style scenario
downward
meditation?
I actually meditate every morning.
Do you?
So I get up this morning, meditated.
What do you think about
that? How do you reckon thoughts? You'd go getting us to meditate, this group?
I'll give me another 5 or 6 weeks.
We could have a meditation session.
We might actually do one on air.
I would love that. I would love that. How long do you sit down for and wind yourself
15
out?
15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes.
Just and calms me down.
How do you release your mind?
Release my mind.
Yeah, is that what the idea is?
Yeah, no, just breathing okay. techniques. I'll show you, blokes. Don't worry about that. End of the year, we'll be the calmest commentary crew on radio.
Well, I think your man, the Duck, could do with a little bit of that just to wind himself down a little bit. As you said, a great round of footy. Going to be pretty wet at the MCG. Just a quick thought on this game. Carlton take on Essendon. I'm not sure they're going to get 80,000 here due to the weather, Duck, but always a good game, this one.
Well, it should be, and it doesn't matter where each other on the ladder. It's only early in the year, but Essendon playing some good footy and Carlton being quite competitive, I think, in their first two rounds. So it should be a good game.
Well, our first guest is on the line. This man has played for the Hawthorn Football Club. He's been a coach. He's been an administrator. And now he is looking after the umpires. Good afternoon to you, Peter Schwab. Hello, Schwabby.
Hi, Mark.
How are you enjoying the new role? Is it more relaxed or more stressful than those you've had in the past? Because, by gee, there's a bit of scrutiny involved.
Yeah, there's certainly stress and there's certainly scrutiny. Probably more so when you coach a game of footy. I think that's where the most stress is. But this has a bit, but I don't have to win, so I do it in some ways, but not on the scoreboard.
If you are stressed, Schwabby, just ask Roosie for one of his meditation sessions. He's
the Zen Master. That's probably a good idea.
Hey, the big issue is the holding the ball at the moment. We saw last round you conceded that the umpires are probably a bit too hot on that. And we've seen a bit of a correction this round with players getting more of a chance to dispose the ball, that prior opportunity. How are you seeing it umpired this round? Is that the standard that you want to see for the rest of the season?
Personally,
yes.
I think we've been fairer to the players taking possession of the football. I mean, ultimately, in this game where there's so many people around the contest, and when you have 200 tackles like we did the other night in Sydney, that the pressure on the ball player is enormous. So I think you just got to be fair enough to him to say, well, if you go and get it, we'll give you some chance to get rid of it. And I mean, it's all around prior. It all depends on how much prior we want to give people. Some people have a different view than maybe I do. So, you know, we're all varying in our interpretation because we have a particular bent in what we think's right. But ultimately, the prior is about did he actually have a chance to kick or handle the ball when he first took it? If no, then you've got to give him an attempt. And I think we're losing a little bit of sight. The attempt, a lot of people see the attempt as a throw. And I think that's where we were heading a little bit with the umpires. So we just tried to make a small correction on it.
Yeah, I think, Schwabby, this weekend's been a lot better. And I applaud you guys for coming out. I know there's been a lot of debate about rules of the week and all that sort of stuff. But I suppose in some ways coaching umpires is very similar to coaching footballers. I mean, Melbourne supporters' expectations of me last year is we correct things, there's weaknesses, there's things we do well every week and we work on them. I mean, my expectation, I guess the fans' expectations is exactly the same of you or the umpires. So I think the fact that you've come out and said we were too strict on it is a real positive, and I think we need to start clearing things up for the fans, and I applaud you for that. I guess the difficulty is, as you mentioned, is they're more interpretations now than rules. And that's, as I think you said in the paper, it's very difficult for an umpire to... It's not really rules in our game. And I guess that's why I'm not critical of umpires. I'm more critical of the laws of the game committee and how difficult they've made it to umpire. So just going a little bit further, Schwabby, when you're actually coaching your umpires and going through maybe some vision, what are you asking them to look at in the process of tackling and getting rid of the football?
Well, I spoke to Hayden. Hayden was the head umpire and pretty much, you know, the main driver of the coaching with three other full-time coaches. I said to Hayden, let's have a look at a few of the decisions that were made in regards to holding the ball and work out exactly what we think's prior opportunity. But then when we do that, I think you've got a basis on which to start your decision-making. Because ultimately, the umpire's got to decide in a very quick time with a tackle. First off, was the tackle legal, et cetera, et cetera. But then did the player, before he took possession of the ball, when he took possession of the ball, did he have a chance to kick or handball the football? That's the decision on prior. So I thought a little bit when I was watching a lot of the vision that the player who took possession of the ball didn't really have that opportunity. And then if you don't think he's had a prior, you've got to say, okay, is he now making an attempt to handball or kick it? And I just think as umpires, we thought we were too hard on the genuine attempt and we were penalising them for throwing the football. And they just have to make an attempt. So it doesn't have to be an illegal handball when you've had no prior.
And Alistair Clarkson says he's confused still by this, Schwabby. Have you communicated this, do you feel, clearly to the coaches and the football clubs?
Well, we have because we send out our coaching vision to all clubs. So, in all honesty, it's up to the clubs too to
read the email.
Well, to take the coaching notes and have a look at what we're doing, and if need be, have a conversation. Look, I had a long conversation this week with John Longmire. I think everyone knows that. I also had a discussion with a few other coaches around it, but not every coach contacted me, and I don't contact every coach, but. It was pretty clear in the press and media what I was saying, but it was also very clear what our coaching notes and coaching vision were saying to them.
Schwabby, I agree with everything that Roosie said just before. I just want to ask you about a decision the other night. I'm not sure whether you saw it. The Scott Pendlebury one where he was actually kicking the ball off the ground, and I think it was Hannabury came in. What was that, the right decision or wrong decision in your view?
I think it was the right decision. I think Scott had every right to kick the ball off the ground at that point. That's the sliding rule. I mean, if you look, I mean, we talk about Henry, which is interesting because I know last year's grand final he should have got a free kick going way, way back. But I think we just got to protect the player there because if you get a serious knee injury by players rolling onto their legs, I mean, it's catastrophic. So I think it was the right call.
Even though he was kicking the ball off the ground, there is kicking in danger in our game. This is that grey area that Ruthie was talking about, just so difficult to umpire.
Yeah, it is. And I think the umpire just has to make the call on whether he felt at that point the players sliding in was dangerous and had the potential to cause injury. And he made that call, and I was happy with that call.
Peter Schwab, AFL umpires boss, thanks for joining us on the Sunday Rub. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday, Schwabby.
All right, enjoy that nice wet day out there. I'm under the roof here.
Yeah, no, very
wet. It'll be a hard game to play today. Yeah,
it will be, but I'm sure your boys and girls will do a wonderful job. Thanks, Schwabby.
Thanks for your interest. See you, boys.
Great to have Peter Schwab on. Just to explain a few things, you had different views, obviously, on the incident where you thought Penderbury was kicking in danger, Doug.
I think you would have been right either way and wrong either way in that decision. That's that grey that Roosie. This is the best game in the world, mm-hmm. but there is no question hardest game to umpire, without a doubt.
I was watching the footy last night, and I sit there and I watch the press conferences. I always enjoy the press conferences. Ross Lyon, obviously up and about, one of the best press conference deliverers for mine, Jay-Z, yes. in the game. And you need to hang around to the end of the press conference when he just delivers a couple of gems. And he threw this one in very late, and it got me thinking.
Someone I respect in the game I spoke to, he said everyone wants to talk about this, talk about that. Sometimes it's just working around the ball and the contest a bit fiercer, and then your backs look like they can defend, your backs look like they can run, your fours look like they're pretty good. Sometimes. But I don't know, he was 2-time grand final coach, premiership coach, so I thought that's a pretty good point.
Now there's one of those, funnily enough, Duck, in the box, sitting to my right. Roosie, I reckon that was in reference to you.
Well, I don't know who Ross speaks to.
Oh, now, Roosie.
Hang on. I don't want to put words in his mouth. I mean, I don't know how many friends he's got and who he speaks to all the time. But I mean, what I do know is, look, when I was coaching, you bounce things off people that, yeah, you have a lot of time for, and particularly the ones that are in the industry and been in situations, because there's only 18 senior coaches.
Roosie, I mean, it was you, mate. What did you say to him?
Well, I did speak to him. I'm not saying I didn't speak to him, but I don't want to put words. Ross is not here, Duck. He's not here to defend himself. He might have spoken to another 2-time grand final premiership coach.
There's not many out there.
But my point is, I think there's, you know, there is only 18 senior coaches. So, you know, what I found at times when I was coaching, you know, apart from your assistant coaches who are great, you know, it's good every now and then for someone to call you or ring or bounce things off or whatever. So I talked to Ross. He's a great mate. We talk about everything. And we don't often talk about football, to be perfectly frank. But when things, you know, there's a lot of media coverage and there's a lot of stuff going on. And you know, at the end of the day, and that's probably why I'm so strong on what happens around the football, because at the end of the day, you can cover a lot of, you know, flaws in your game. We saw Collingwood have 115 tackles against, and everyone's talking about rebound off 50 and you know, Darcy Moore and all those sorts of things. Yeah, they only won the game by a point, but it does cover up a lot of flaws, and we just sort of discussed that.
Did you wake up Saturday morning, look in the mirror, and you must be pretty happy, because I've got to admit, this time last week, and not a lot of people picked up on it, and you actually opened my eyes to it, but you spoke about Penelbury, Treloar and Sidebottom and those guys, and how they were coached, and that's basically what you were saying. And we brought it up on Talking Footy, and I'm assuming Fox, you know, it was on the couch, and I think Kingy brought it up, and so everyone all of a sudden started talking about it off the back of you last Sunday.
First on Triple M,
yeah,
on the Sunday,
and incredibly, Treloar 15 tackles. I think Sidebottom had 12 or 15, was it?
Yep, and Penelbury 10.
So
you'd make a good coach, really.
All double, but all double figures. And I honestly believe, and Nathan Buckley in his post-match press conference actually said as much, that they took it personally, given that off the back of that and the storm that was created behind it, they were sensational in that area. And when you win by a point, that was the difference. And I thought Treloar, and I agree with you, Treloar, very good player, very good, but his second, third efforts and tackling on Friday night was exceptional.
Yeah, he had 15 tackles, which is a career high.
Yep.
Look, and I guess it just gets back to how you see the game and what you see is important. I mean, the game is very complicated, as is umpiring. And as we know now, there's so many stats in football. And I think one of the things I learned through coaching is you've got to decipher as a coach what you think is extremely important, because there's so much commentary on football. And the reason I sort of talk about Collingwood, we'd played Collingwood twice last year. And I saw them at their best. You know, we beat them, but they, in what I think it was second quarter out here, they were fierce, relentless, and I think they came back with about 5 goals up. They came back. So I've seen them duck at their best around the ball, and I just feel if they do that, they're a much better team, and they were on Friday night. Yep.
Just back to that conversation that you may or may not have had with Ross Lyon. If you were having a discussion like that, Roosie, do you talk specifics or just generally football theories?
Look, I mean, I'm very careful not to be too specific about his, you know, his team, or if I talk to, you know, someone from another club, because I'm not inside the Fremantle Football Club. But Ross and I have worked together, and he knows what I value and I know what he values. And I think maybe just getting someone sometimes outside the club just to give a little bit of an opinion on what they...
A reassuring opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he knows how to coach. I don't pretend to be able to, you know, take any credit whatsoever for what they did last night. They were outstanding. But I think it's just a friendly ear, someone to chat to, just to because there is there's so much noise in football now. And the senior coach, as I said, there's only 18, and it's not like Ross can ring John Longmire or Ross can ring, you know, I mean, every now and then we sort of wrap our arms around each other, but certainly someone outside of the club that's got some experiences that what you have is very helpful.
That's the type of access you get here on the Sunday, Rob Schwatto. Just speaking with all the big names. So, Grigger. Jeez, this will bring the house down if he can thump this one home from outside of the arc. Got the drop punt going, Brian.
Yep.
Look out! Long range banger from Sean Grigg. The genius that is James Brayshaw calling the Tigers to a win yesterday over the Eagles. The Tigers are going beautifully. 11-10-65, too strong for the West Coast Eagles in a really wet second half. 8-17-65. Joining us on the line is a man from the Richmond Football Club. We just heard his name, Sean Grigg. Grigger, I know it's all about 1 week at a time and keeping a lid on it, but Richmond fans will wake up this morning with a massive smile on their face. I'm sure you're pretty happy too. Congratulations and thanks for having a chat with us.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Yeah, it's nice to wake up on Sunday with some 4 points, and the crowd yesterday were unbelievable, so it was good the Tiger faithful came out and watch us win.
Sean, I was in awe of your man Dusty Martin yesterday. Played with a fractured jaw. Just has 40 possessions, 900 metres gained and 15 clearances. He's just had a phenomenal start to the season, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He's a freak. I think they wanted him to wear a helmet, but it's equally tough, his vein, so he didn't want to wear that. He loves his hair and how he looks, so it made no difference. He dominated again.
How much more aggressive is he in terms of his mindset? It probably took him a couple of years to come out of his shell, but do you think he rocks up to the MCG thinking, I'm going to absolutely tear my man up and dominate this game? Is that his sort of thinking at the moment?
He's definitely playing with a lot of confidence. Yeah, why wouldn't he? He's played well for a couple of years now, and he's just got that confidence that he can play well on any given day.
Hey, Griggy, you've got three small forwards that are doing really, really well for you, albeit very young, and you're going to get inconsistencies. But yesterday, Castagna, Rioli and Butler, all very, very good.
They are, Duck. They just bring that excitement and flair and pace, so... we just asked them to bring that defensive pressure and play the spades the first three games. So hopefully the boys can keep it up and, love watching them play.
The other thing that's, I reckon, really pleasing, I reckon in round one when you won, I reckon Rance was quiet. Riewoldt was the other one that didn't have a big influence. And once again yesterday, Riewoldt, not a big influence, yet you have a really, really good win. They're really good signs.
Yeah, it seems we've got some good depth. We've got some good guys playing in the VFL as well. So there's competition for spots. So everyone's put their hand up and playing well.
Yeah, Sean, what do you see internally? Obviously, we just talked about the noise involved in footy now and the amount of media attention and all that sort of stuff. And I think we hear coaches all the time talk about, well, it's what we value in here and we don't worry too much about it, which is actually true, despite some people will probably think players and coaches read every single article that's written and et cetera, et cetera.
But some do.
How are you seeing the club internally now? You've been there for, what, 6 or 7 years? How are you seeing the club yourself?
Yeah, it's changed a lot over the last sort of 6 months with new coaches coming in, new players, and just a real excitement around the place at the moment. It's just, we've got 45 different personalities and guys that are just encouraged just to bring what they're good at and really shine. So it's not everyone has to be the same sort of person, same sort of player. So we're just seeing guys play to their strengths and they're going well.
A lot of focus on Dusty and rightly so. Koch has had another great game, 34 touches yesterday. But I want to get your thoughts, Sean, on the recruitment of Toby Nankervis, because on the surface he seems to have made a significant difference to the footy team already.
Yeah, he has. He's sort of in the mould of big Ivan Marek. He just gives his all. That's all we ask of him. It's like having an extra midfielder around. He's so good ground level. So We're really loving him. What he's bought from a good club up in Sydney as well. So he's made a real effort.
We're speaking to Sean Grigg on the Sunday Rub. Grigg, it seems every time I open the paper or watch the news, it's all about Dustin Martin and his contract. It's the way of the modern footballer. As his mates, do you have a word to him? Do you say anything to him? Mate, you need to stay. Or do you take it out of him and have a laugh with him? Or is it a completely ignored subject by the rest of the playing group?
I like to get into him a bit and have a bit of a joke. And, you know, I sort of get into him and say, hurry up and get it done, because, you know, there's a few of us out of contract and I've got a young family to feed, and all that sort of stuff. So, we just try and make a few jokes of it. And hopefully they can get it done and stay, because, you know, we're loving the Russian colours.
We have a similar situation here when Roosie signed up and Duck had already signed up. There's sort of bugger all left in the salary cap, isn't there, Swatter? And I know you're in a similar situation, Griggy.
Yeah, hopefully he hangs around. So you know, I love watching him play, and you know, he's a great guy in the club. So fingers crossed.
Can you see him going anywhere else, Sean? Is there absolutely certain in your mind that he'll stay?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to see him stay, but obviously I'm not privy to contracts and those decisions. So hopefully it works itself out.
Sean, we heard Dimmer talk probably, I think it was the end of last year, might have been the start of, or just after Christmas, about freeing you guys up a little bit. And I guess that's the balance, isn't it? Coaching, it's a full-time profession now. Guys, a lot of meetings, a lot of individual meetings, a lot of structure, whether it's kick-in, stoppages, et cetera, et cetera. So just tell the listeners, what did that actually mean in terms of when Dimmer was explaining that to the public? You know, felt he overcoached the team.
I suppose it's just been a lot of just bring your strength. So you've seen the guys up forward, you know, Dan Butler, little George Costanza and Daniel Rioli. They're so quick, and they're just encouraged to bring their pace and play with excitement. So it's more just you know, not worried about making mistakes and all that sort of thing. Just bringing what you're good at and hopefully go right.
And the new weights program, Sean, that all the midfielders are on in particular, have you been sort of beefing up in the strong room, mate, as well? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's Lukey Mann. He's come from the Bulldogs. He was our rehab coach last year, so he's taken over the weights. And, it was a bit different program this year, which is good. Good change up.
Spud Bar going well, Griggy? Selling lots of potatoes?
They're going all right. There's 19 shops open at the moment, so, they're ticking over. It's good.
19 shops?
19 shops.
That's a sort of conglomerate style setup.
Wouldn't mind a free spud. Anytime
for you boys. Anytime.
Good on you, Griggy. We appreciate your time. Best of luck as the Tigers continue their season.
No worries. Thank you. Cheers.
Hey, just to extend on Duck's point before about Jack Riewoldt, is that a couple of quiet weeks? Once upon a time, Jack gets one or two goals. Richmond don't win. Add in Caddy, add in Prestia. Haven't had huge games, but they're undefeated. That is a great sign for Richmond that we haven't been able to say that for a long time.
What did you think of... did you watch yesterday, Roosie, at all? Did you
see the game? No, I was doing the
other game, yeah. To me, yesterday, Jack flew for, I reckon, 8-10 screamers. Didn't look like taking one of them. I think Jack just needs to get back to the absolute basics and, you know, use his body. And if he, you have to jump at the footy, jump at the footy. But he seriously went for, I reckon, 10 marks of the year. And never look like taking not one. So,
I think the other thing, Duck,
good sign that they're winning. Yeah. But let's be honest. If Jack's up and about, they win.
They win by more. I think I'm just going to ask you a question though, because the way the game's played now, and everyone's been calling for Dusty to play at full forward. I mean, Jack is a traditional full forward, so he's sort of a little bit betwixt and between, isn't he? I mean, he's a 6'5", genuine key size that can kick 6 or 7 goals. He gets a little bit lost, but to his credit, he seems to be accepting of that now. There's criticism about his body language. So the flip side of that is I love the way he's actually adapted to the team, doing what the team's asking him to do.
I agree with that.
But it is an unusual role that he's playing for a guy of his size, which allows Dusty to get deep forward.
Well, I think the thing, Riewoldt obviously, I think he played his best footy when he actually got up the ground. He was playing as more of a centre-half forward, and a lot of people thought that, okay, he's not hitting the scoreboard as much, but he's generally a good user. I think he had 8 turnovers yesterday, which is unlike him, because generally he uses the footy quite well. But it is a massive positive, I agree, Swatter, the fact that he's not playing anywhere near his best and they're still winning footy.
I think the other thing is the sum of all parts, Swatter.
Yeah.
And I remember... used to saying to some players that, you know, they get frustrated, you know, when they're not getting 25, 30 possessions. And what I used to say to them is a couple in particular come to mind I probably shouldn't mention. But as we get better as a team, you will get more accolades and people will, there'll be less criticism on you. If, let's be honest, if they were 0-3, Jack would probably be under the pump now.
Spot on.
But they're 3-0, he's playing a role within the team, and that's the art of coaching. That's the art of explaining to players, we don't need you to do this, this, and this. And that's that external noise I was talking about before. Rub that external noise out. They're 3-0. The sum of all their parts now has allowed them to get 3-0. As much as we're talking about Dusty, we're also talking about their young forwards. We're talking about, you know, their bounce off half back, their game style, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a credit to Dimmer and their leadership group that's embracing it.
Who are those players? Just out of interest.
No, well, maybe later in the year.
Just, it'd be remiss of me not to mention Rance while we're talking about Richmond. He was back to his best. Very good. He was very good yesterday.
Dusty Martin, any update on what's happening with his contract?
Well, the initial offer was $850 a year from Richmond, but have they got a bump up that offer now, because that gap is closing. We thought Patrick Dangerfield probably the number one player in the competition. He's had an outstanding start of the season, Dusty. Have they got to pay $1 million+ for him now?
I said on the first round after the Thursday night game they played here, and, you know, albeit first game, he was absolutely brilliant. He's worth what someone's prepared to pay, as simple as that. But the simple facts are, as far as I know, he's been offered more at two other clubs than what Richmond have already offered him. So they're going to have to come up to that level. And my understanding is that is $1 million.
Melbourne club, Stuck?
Yes.
I know in America, and I had this discussion with someone from the PA actually the other night. America, they have the contracts. Everyone knows what everyone's getting. Mm. Does that help or hinder Australian rules football? Would that help Dusty?
The players don't want the transparency.
I understand that. Yep. But does that help, Jesus, Dusty?
There's a lot of players in our game. This is why players don't want. I remember at North, without changing, you know, the direction here, Howie. I remember it's like an unwritten rule that even within a footy club, Roosie, you don't let other players know what you're on. And I remember at the time when I was at North, I actually went. I think I had the conversation with you, Swatter, and I remember when we got a Robert Pyman was coming to the footy club and they were going to pay him an astronomical amount of money. And I went into the club and said, you know what, if you're offering him more than Wayne Schwoss or Anthony Stevens or Glenn Archer, then you're kidding yourself. You just can't do that. And I remember, so we were quite open about it. And I remember Mark Ricciuto came to me in 98 after they beat us in the granny and we're in Ireland playing in the Irish series. And he said, Duck, this is the money I'm on. What do you think? And I said, you're getting jibbed.
Yeah. But I guess that's the point. I tend to think we don't need to do it. But if we rank Dusty 3 in the competition, should he be paid the third highest player competition?
That's, he probably should.
Yeah.
He's going to get paid this year, that's for sure.
Danger, danger. Pick up by McCarthy. Ball didn't go the distance. Falls into the path of danger. Storms onto it. There's the Cats opening goal of the second term.
It's grabbed by Taylor. Little hand pass off to Dangerfield, who puts it through for a goal. He's second of the game. Tackle lost it to Dangerfield. Oh, look at Paddy from 45, one step, and he's put it through. All class. Paddy Dangerfield, he's got three.
He is one of the most exciting players in the game, Paddy Dangerfield for McDonald's. This is the Sunday Rub on Triple M. And you'd expect this man on a Sunday morning, he might be out and about, he might be looking at his Brownlow, he might be down the surf, but I'm getting word through. Yes, Duck?
Might be squatting his wife.
He might be, Duck.
Squatting? Have you not seen that vision of Paddy?
I have, yes.
Doing
the
squat?
I didn't quite know what you were saying he was up to on a Sunday morning, because I heard a rumour, this can't be true, as Paddy Dangerfield joins us. You've really thrown me there, Duck, with what you get up to on a Sunday morning. Tell me, Paddy, that you're not on the way to baby bunting.
Parked out in front of it at the moment, Howie. G'day, boys. So, a busy Sunday morning.
What are you shopping for, Paddy?
Paddy?
Well, 12 weeks away from the birth of our first child, so it's about time that we got organised.
Paddy, go in there, go nuts. It's like the Bunnings. It's like the Bunnings for new dads. You go in there, you just see everything. You get three baby seats and four prams.
And then, Paddy, like your wedding, they drop on you, you need the best for your child, so you need to get this top-of-the-line option.
You need a running pram. You need a stable pram.
he's got plenty of money, Duck. Anyway, he's probably be going to buy the store. What are you talking about?
Thanks for joining us, Paddy. Great speaking to you. Have a great afternoon. Now, Paddy, what about the Cats? It was an interesting game yesterday. Your last quarter and your Joel Selwood's last quarter was fantastic. But at stages, Melbourne looked like they were going to take this one away from you. Well done.
Yeah, it was an interesting game, as you said. Melbourne certainly didn't kick super well in front of goal, and that certainly kept us in the game at stages. But I suppose at the end of the day, it's a four-quarter game, and you need to be able to convert in front of goal. We were able to do that and finish the game pretty well in that fourth quarter.
Paddy, I actually drove through Moggs Creek the other day too, Duck. I actually was taking the in-laws down the Great Ocean Road.
Did you blink?
That's not a big place, is it, Paddy? It's not a beautiful place. So if you've got any real estate tips there, you've probably got the acreage on the waterfront, I would think. But I reckon Chris Scott, as coaches always are, Paddy, pretty honest in the paper this morning, because it's amazing. I did the game yesterday, and you're right. It's a four-quarter game. You've got to be in it. And certainly Melbourne left the door open. But is it sustainable? Like you're only, I think, 48 inside 50s averaging a week. To your credit, I mean, your set shots at goal, you're number one by a mile, kicked 8-4, 11-4, 11-2. But I sense Scotty's still a little bit disappointed, as disappointing as it can be after a 3-0 start.
Oh, look, we've certainly got plenty of improvement left in us, Rusey. We're not playing as well as we'd like to be playing. That being said, we want to be playing our best footy at the most important time of the year. So the most important thing at the moment for us and for all sides is to continue to chalk up wins, even though you may not be playing your best football. And I think that's the sign of good sides, and that's what I think we're doing at the moment. So the challenge is for us are to continue to improve and work in the cohesion, given we've got quite a few new players into our side. We spoke last year with most media interviews that our Cats players have done, that it was going to take time because there were so many new players. And the same has happened again this year. We've had a 50% turnover in our list in the last 2 years. So there's been an enormous change at the football club. So that's why I'm really optimistic that we're playing some okay footy. We're still able to get the job done. But the longer we play together, I think the better we're going to become.
Yeah, I 100% agree, Paddy. Sorry, Duck. Because the wins at the start of the year are valuable. They're incredibly valuable, and we've seen teams probably blow some wins, and that's going to cost teams at the end of the year. Well, you guys are winning games, and that's what it's all about. I think the other thing which I'm really liking is Mitch Duncan's coming in the midfield and having a significant impact. I mean, the Menzel story is just a fantastic story. I mean, what he said after the game is, and you forget, I think he said it's just great preparing for a game of football, because for 4 years he wasn't preparing. So there's some really good, couple of young kids too I thought were terrific yesterday. Parfitt. He was fantastic, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's such an excitable young kid as well. And add to him James Parsons, who played his first game, playing a really difficult position, that half forward line. You know, you've got to be able to turn your opponent inside out, and both Brandon and James are able to do that and really contribute in a really meaningful way. In regards to Dan Menzel, it's just a wonderful story. It was great to see him play, you know, a huge amount of football last year, having missed that 4 years of footy. But I think this year we're really starting to see that, you know, at his best, he's one of the best forwards in the competition and can make the ball talk like not too many can.
Paddy, are the Cats too reliant on yourself and the captain, Joel?
Sorry, Duck, that broke up.
Are you too reliant on yourself and Joel?
I don't think so. I think certainly we spend the majority of the time in the midfield, so naturally our numbers are going to be inflated compared to others, simply because we're spending large chunks of time in there. I think if you dig a little deeper, you find there's really meaningful contributions from other players that doesn't get recognised externally, but internally we certainly recognise just how important that is for our entire team.
Let's hear what the coach had to say about that very issue post-game yesterday.
Our two best players were sensational. You know, I probably shouldn't say that because I encourage people to talk about how we depend on them, but we do. Everyone depends on their best players. The thing that we're really fortunate with as a coaching group is that we've got two players who are super players in and of themselves, but when the chips are down, they're just unbelievable.
Paddy Dangerfield is joining us on the Sunday Rub. Jay Clark.
Hey, yeah, how do you think Harry Taylor's going in this forward role, Paddy? Because the coach, Chris Scott, said it probably isn't going as well as, you know, he would hope or it could. How do you think the big fella's going at centre forward?
Oh, look, I think that if you judge it purely on goal, then you'd say, oh, it's not working. But if you look at the goals for the entire side and our scoring capability, even though, as you mentioned, when I first came on, that we've only had 48 inside 50s on average per game, we're scoring so much better than we were last year. So while Harry may not be getting the individual results he would like, the role that he's playing for our team, it certainly can't be understated, because if you look at the way that Tommy Hawkins has started the season, Dan Menzel, Stephen Motlop and our other forwards, he plays an enormous role in that for us. So it's a difficult one because he's going to move from forward to half back at different stages. So it can be hard to build yourself into a game and when you are being thrust to all positions on the field. But that's the selfless person that Harry is. He's doing what's best for the team.
It's funny, Paddy. We spoke about that yesterday because one of the things we don't see as commentators is exactly... Because your efficiency, your 38% goal-scoring efficiency, 11% above the AFL average. So he's obviously doing something right, whether that be dragging his player away from Tommy. Tommy's been fantastic. I don't think I've seen Tommy in as many one-on-one contests, you know, in three rounds in the last... You know, Duck would have loved it, but in the last six seasons. So he clearly is doing something right because your efficiency going forward has been exceptional.
Yeah, it has been. And that was certainly an issue for us last year, Rudy. We weren't anywhere near as efficient as what we could have been. If you take it purely back to our last game last season, we had 73 inside 50s and lost the game by 40 points. So that's an area that we've really needed to improve on, and we actually have done that. So there's certainly other areas of our game that we need to continue to work on, but that's been a really pleasing element for us that we have been more efficient, and Harry certainly played a huge role in that.
You're now a big dog at the Players Association, Paddy. I think, what is it, Vice President? How far is this deal off, mate? So you're going to get this deal done this week. You just need to barge through those doors and sort it out with Gillen. When can we expect the CBA finalisation?
Well, look, I'd like to say soon. At the moment, things are moving quite slowly, albeit they are moving. But I'd be lying to you if I said, we're only a few days away from it being finalised. There's still a bit of argy-bargy. But we'll continue to work through that. And hopefully, part of negotiation is both parties giving a little bit and understanding from... You know, where the AFL's coming from, where we're coming from as the Players Association. So there's still a bit of water to go under the bridge, unfortunately.
Paddy, Roosey, mate, I want you to look into this because superannuation, I know, is big for players. I played 356 games and got a cheque for 3,500. So I think that's a bigger issue than you probably understand. If you can look into that with Gil, and I'll be looking forward to a bigger cheque than that, if you wouldn't mind.
I think one of the great things for us as a competition, if you're a young player that's coming into the game now and you're lucky enough to play 5+ years of footy, your superannuation, your retirement scheme, not the superannuation, sorry, rather, it'll be 15 grand a year for the next 5 years once you finish. So that's above
your own thanks for rubbing it in, mate. So, yeah, thanks very much for rubbing it in. Yeah.
Speaking of Paddy Dangerfield,
I probably could have got 4.8 million or something.
Speaking of Paddy Dangerfield on the Sunday Rub, before we let you go, Paddy, obviously you move footy clubs over a year ago now to have a more rounded life and spend more time with your family. Is it working out that way for you? And it must put you in a good place.
Yeah, it's been special, Howie. As you know, you're from that beautiful part of the world. Mm-hmm. And it does give you that that time away from footy and just being able to enjoy footy and the competition when you're at the club and when you're in Melbourne and around Geelong, but also to be able to just sit back and relax and go for a surf. We had about 8 players from the club come down to Moggs on Friday before the game. We all had a bit of a surf and had a bit of a chuckle and a bit of a laugh, and that's the wonderful thing the Surf Coast provides.
Now, mate, when you're picking a pram, you make sure that they fold up easy and undo easy and go in the boot very simply.
We're having discussions at the moment, Duck, around just the safety quality of these car seats. My argument is they're all safe because they wouldn't put them on the shelf unless they were safe. So there's nothing wrong with going to the cheapest one.
No, you just you need three or four though. You've got to get one for Pop, one for both cars.
Hey, Paddy, just on the whole surfing thing, do you surf before a game?
Yeah, yeah.
You do? So it doesn't take it out of you too much?
I don't think so. I think I'm not going to surf for 4 hours game day, but there's nothing wrong with a, you know, half hour, 40-minute paddle. It's not, I don't think it's physically taxing because it's only your upper body. It's not like you're running laps on an oval. And it takes you away from what you got to do that night. You just focus on the next wave and, I find it really relaxes me.
Yeah, obviously. Well, obviously, I'm surfing bigger waves than you because there's no way I'd be doing that before I came into commentary.
Oh, I think as players, we have so many preconceived ideas around what you should or shouldn't do before a game or the day of a game. I think you've just got to live your life. You've still got to do the normal things you do during the day, even if you're playing that night. If you're thinking about the game at 8 a.m. and you're not playing for another, you know, 11 hours, you've played the game in your mind before you even get to the MCG. So you're still going to enjoy things outside of footy, even though it might be game day and however, the whole week's come down to this 2 hours, you've still got to remove yourself slightly from it.
I think it's all about performance, Paddy, too, isn't it? I mean, Nathan Jones was a big surfer and Nathan used to go down and people used to say, oh, what do you think about that? And I said, well, if he's playing well on the weekend, because you do have your own routine and everyone's really different, Paddy, and I think if you play three or four shockers, I reckon you'd want to tuck your surfboard away. but, I mean, that's the nature of the business, isn't it? I feel if you've got something that works for you and you're playing good football, there's no reason you can't continue it.
Yeah, I think you make a great point because at the end of the day, your preparation is your preparation. It's not one size fits all. It shouldn't be, you don't have the shortbread on the flight before a game because everyone prepares just totally differently, to number 32, whoever's next to me or on the locker room. So you can't judge other people on the way that they prepare themselves because look at the success Dane Swan had in his career, and that was certainly very unique preparation, but it worked for him. So why would we or anyone judge him when he's getting the results for it?
Always a treat to chat with you, Paddy. Best of luck at Baby Bunting and try and get out of there under 5K, and I think you've done all right.
Thanks for having me, boys. Cheers.
Yeah, great to speak to Paddy Dangerfield.
Hey, I'll tell you what, he brings up a very good point. It brings up a very good point for coaches too, not to try to make everyone like everyone else.
Was there anything you avoided pre-game or did do pre-game, Ducky boy?
Pre-game? Mm. No, I was a bit like Paddy. I sort of did my own thing. I'm very relaxed. Yeah, nothing untoward, Howie.
I've heard of guys. I think was it Terry Wallace who used to run 5Ks, I think, before a game.
Did he?
I was fortunate to go to the States and I went to the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan did weights before a game, just about every week. So it's absolutely right, Duck. I mean, some players that wouldn't suit what I do or you do or what have you. But and again, it comes back to performance. And I say this, if Paddy has four or five shockers, which I don't think any of us think he's going to, then you've got to change your routine. You've got to do something different. But while you're playing well, there's no reason why you can't do it.
It is that time of the day where we get to one of my new favourite segments, Schwatter, and it is called...
Gather round, boys and girls. It's story time with Rizzy.
Ah, we sort of gather around the fire. We've got our hot chocolate, we've got our little doonies in our blankets, and we're ready to go. Duck's got his weak hot chocolate there. Now, Roosie, we go back to round 15 or so, 1986. You and the Fitzroy boys are out at training, and Leon Weegaard, one of the major administrators of that football club,
president,
wanders over.
Yeah, look, we were training on a Sunday morning at Wesley College. I think we were on the tennis courts. We had some pretty good tennis players back then as well. But it was just a lazy Sunday morning session and obviously been a lot of talk around the finances. Leon came and was obviously really honest. Said the club was... There's three options for the footy club. One was that we fold completely. Two was that we merge with a Melbourne-based club. And three was that we went to Queensland. And we voted as a playing group to stick together. Really close playing group at the time. Young blokes, older blokes, terrific bunch of guys. And we voted as a group to relocate. If that was going to be our only three options, we'd prefer to stay together as a team and as a playing group. I think we had seven rounds to go. We won six of our next seven games. And during that period, I was captain, I think, and Purdy was vice-captain. We'd met with, there was three consortiums. Ronnie Joseph was running one. I think there was Skase and Cronin. I don't know whether, I can't remember, they were both the same with the separate ones. And we were having lunches and dinners, and they were trying to say, look, would you come? And we were saying, yeah, look, if we can get everyone going. So it was a busy, busy period where you're trying to concentrate on winning games, but you're meeting, you're thinking, well, my future's in Brisbane. You know, we're going to fly up there. We're going to play at the end of the year. And we won six or seven games. We actually made the finals, and I'll never forget. It's probably one of the most famous games I ever played in. Was at Waverley. It was a pretty miserable rainy day, and it was no one was expecting us to win. And Mickey Conlon hadn't touched the Sherrin for three quarters and 28 minutes. Duck hadn't touched the nut, I've done a pump my own tyres. I made a beautiful tackle. My only tackle in my career in the middle of the ground. I should have got the kick, but Leon Harris sharked the ball and took the ball, kicked it to Mickey Conlon, and Mickey kicked the goal to put us in front, and the crowd went absolutely nuts.
And the Fitzroy side have still got a chance as the ball comes down there now. Harris dodges, he's clear, goes for the long kick. They get a goal here. Conlon's got it. He could kick a goal to put him in front. He has. They're in front.
By a point,
and they might have won the game here.
They're a point in front. Now there it is, they have won it. Congratulations, Fitzroy, and the Lions are into the first semi-final. Great to hear Lou Richards there in commentary. So at that time, Rizzy, what do you think when this is a footy club you're putting your heart, sweat, tears and your soul into, and they come to you and say pretty much that's
well,
it?
Well, I think when I look back, I think the reason we were able to win six or seven games is because the players were so close, and yeah, we all got on unbelievably well, and yeah, we rallied and we played well, and I guess we never really talked about it, but I think the theory was, well, look, we just got to go out the best way we can. We won the next week against Sydney, the Swans. Bernie Quinlan was unbelievable. I think he kicked four or five in the last quarter. And then we eventually ran out of steam against the Hawks in the preliminary final. And then a company called Hecron came in, paid money, saved the footy club.
Hecron, what were they all about?
I think they were a building company or something like that. Right. And they went broke, and there's probably some stories to come after that, because the period, in a way, yeah, it was great for Fitzroy people. But my view, we would have been much better to go to Brisbane as an entity, similar to what the South Melbourne, going to Sydney. And it probably, as exciting it was for Fitzroy people to survive, yeah, we didn't play in finals again. And, yeah, so there's some stories, follow-up stories, which were quite crazy when I look back on it.
We might save those for another Roosie story, Tom. With the money, are you getting paid consistently? Well, what about the facilities at the club and all that type of thing? When you're going out against these other teams and they've got this, did you have bugger all compared to that?
Oh, I remember back in those days, you got paid March, July and December. I think there was three payments through the year. And I remember March would come around and you'd go, oh, gee, you'd ring up. And look, and this is nothing against Fitzroy, because you knew that, oh, Paul, can you wait? And you'd honestly you'd feel guilty about ringing up and asking for your money. When I first arrived at Sydney, and I tell this story, March money was due, and I go, oh, here we go again. And I'd ring up. I said, oh, look, you know, I just wondering when the payment come in. And they said, oh, there's a thing called, you know, bank transfer. It was already in the account. And I was just staggered. I know Duck got paid up front every year. And
in a bag.
In a bag. But it was, but when you're playing, you actually don't even think about it. You don't. I got phone calls as captain from guys that had bought houses. Wow. And bridging finance back then was about 18%. So for those, I'm 53. So for people out there, remember, when I bought my first house, it's another story, it's 13%. So bridging finance was 18% bridging finance. I remember I used to get phone calls from players saying, Rizzy, I'm not getting my money. I'm now having bridging finance. What do you want? What should I do? And I was actually the conduit between the players and the club. But again, at the time, it wasn't an excuse. You didn't really think about it. And it wasn't until you left to go to another club and you realised how difficult it was for the Fitzroy players at that particular time.
When it all came to push and shove and you'd moved on to Sydney and Fitzroy played their last game, how did that affect you?
Yeah, I remember coming to the MCG, 96 I think it was, and they actually had a function across the southern stand, and they had, you know, Bernie Quinlan was there, Gary Wilson was there, And we all sat and we watched. It might have been their second or third last game, because I think their last game was against Frio over there.
Yep.
Might have been their second or third last game. And they got beaten by 100. And I say this with all due respect. You know what they would have been better to do? Grab the best 22 out of that function over on the other side of the ground and put them in jumpers and let them run around, let them see Gary Wilson, Bernie Quinlan, Laurie Serafini, Mickey Conlon, and we wouldn't have got beaten by 100 and something points. But I say that because that's how far the club had plummeted at that stage. And you know, it was really, really sad. I never wanted to leave the footy club, as did Alistair Lynch never wanted to leave the footy club, Paul Broderick, Michael Gale, you know, Gary Pert, the list goes on and on. We wanted to stay. But when I left Fitzroy, it was just, unfortunately, it was just a shell of what the club was.
Do you still have Fitzroy people come up to you these days and talk about how much they miss their club and love their club and still think about their club? I've got mates that gave footy away at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Like the functions I've been to, you still see the same Fitzroy people that go. They're an incredibly loyal bunch. Some have gone on to follow the Brisbane Lions. A lot haven't, as you probably know. So it's, yeah, look, I guess the sad part is you can't see a club now going broke. So we were probably in that early phase where they were trying to expand, trying to get bigger, trying to develop. And it was, you know, well, hopefully we can get them to go to Brisbane. It didn't work out that way, but eventually it did. So I don't think it's going to happen anymore. And we were in that unfortunate phase where, you know, it was not really much about Fitzroy. It was about the greater good of the competition, and Fitzroy was sacrificed a bit because of it.
Roosie, story time, I like it. Where would you like to go next week, Jay-Z?
Back to Sydney coach, yeah. Barry Hall, something like that.
Barry Hall staker scenario.
Playing forward, or... Yeah, we leave it up to Roosie, don't we? Okay, a couple of options, and he likes to pick what he's feeling like.
Maybe we can have a listener segment where they shoot it in and say,
Roosie could talk about this. Now he's opening up to social media at Triple M Footy. What would you like Roosie's story time to involve next week? He's got a nice, deep sort of bass voice as well, Roosie, which works very well. Three-quarter time yesterday, the Bulldogs led Ross Lyons Fremantle Dockers by 14 points. Roosie, we spoke earlier on that you might have had a conversation with Ross during the week. Did you speak to him at three-quarter time?
No, I didn't.
No, you can't claim the turnaround?
No. Ross is a very good coach. He doesn't need any help.
It was a great turnaround. Freo with their first win of the season. They go on to beat the Dogs by 16 points.
And I think what cost the Bulldogs really, 10 goals, 13 they kicked. There's some inaccuracy, a cloak goalless, a Boyd goalless. But I wanted to ask you fellas, it's interesting in terms of a club's premiership defence. And I think back to 96 and 99, Duck, when you played in those two premierships. Looking back at your record the year after, you got off to scratchy starts. So in 97, you lost North Melbourne, lost three out of the first four. And then in 2000, after the 99 flag, you lost the first two. And Sydney in 96, Roosie, got off to a scratchy start as well, losing your first two. I'm just wondering, for the reigning premier, you know, can you tell us about some of the mental challenges early in the next season? And Schwatter's in this as well. Obviously, you played in those. But, you know, the Bulldogs should have won last night, and they'd be really disappointed this morning. But how is it for a young side, you know, to back up in the first month of the next season?
Yeah, look, they would be, and let's not forget that you're a month behind some of those sides in your preparation. So that you've also got to take that into account. The other thing, there's no doubt that it's a mental attitude thing, and I think when you've clearly they're a premiership team, and when you are a premiership team, you sort of know that you're good. And you sort of know that, I just always felt, Swatter, that we could turn it on when we wanted to turn it on. And I know that, I don't know what other teams do, but we used to do blocks of four. Like you'd sit down, I don't know what you did at Sydney, Roosie, but we'd sit down and say, okay, there's a block of four. We want to at least win three of those, or we win four of those. So invariably, if you start the season, you got the first four games, and like you said, you're 1-3, well, you look at the next four, and we'd sit down as a group and say, okay, we'll win the next four, or we've got to win the next four. And that's just how we approach it. But it's definitely a mental attitude thing, and a little bit of the preparation early in the year.
So Bulldogs last night, you're watching that game thinking, are they as sharp as they need to be here? Do you think it was a mental thing?
I don't think that they've been at their best in the first two rounds. They've won the games because they are a very good football team, and they don't rely on any one individual. That's what I mean by team. They're a good team, and they probably got shown up by someone, a team that was actually hungrier. So in the end, it probably comes down to that.
I think there is a physical component first and foremost. So not only are you a month behind, when the practice games start, you're not quite ready. And everyone criticised Sydney for not playing a good team in the, you know, the whatever they called the series back then, the preseason comp. But we weren't physically ready to play the team. So you are a month behind those teams. So there is a physical component. Yeah, I think the thing, the Dogs are a classic example because you know you can play good footy, Swatter. So you're confident in your ability to do it. You just can't do it for probably 120 minutes in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season because of the physical component. Mm. And I think that's where the Dogs are at. I mean, you can see they're a very, very good footy team. They're still 2-1, but they're still physically getting ready. Frio had a month start on them, and Frio overran them in the last quarter. I'm confident the Dogs are going to be around the mark again this year.
Look, it's one loss in a long season. Yep. I don't think that we need to overplay it with the Bulldogs. I agree with what both Duck and Roosie have said, that they've come from a delayed start. I think that, like Paddy Dangerfield said, we want to be playing our best footy at the right time of the year. So it's round three. I think the challenge individually and collectively is they've gone from hunting to the hunted. Every time a team who wins a premiership goes out every week, teams build themselves up to really go at the reigning premier. And I think on a personal note, and I can only speak about 97, I partied too hard.
Did you?
Yeah, because you achieve something that's very special. And yeah. I think the challenge, I can go back to 4 days after, Duck, the Thursday meeting, Dennis got it in the rooms and hit us between the eyes. And I was probably still drunk, but he said, there'll be six blokes in this team that will not be here at the end of this year. And it sits you back on your toes. And as much as a premiership means and individually and collectively, the challenge is you've got to reset really quickly. And I think modern football coaches do that really well. But back in those days, mate, I don't reckon I sobered up for a month.
And just on the Bulldogs, when you know you're a good team, and even through the pre-season comp, you saw that they were getting beaten, well beaten by Gold Coast, I think it was, and then just turned it on in the last quarter and ran over the top. When you're a good team, you have gears, and you can turn it on. Just got to be careful not to get too cute because the competition is that close. And yes, there are times where you can, just sort of back off, and then you have that next gear that you can go to. You can switch on the tap, so to speak. But in the competition now, it is that close, and is that you've just got to be very, very careful, and they've got to be careful that they don't think that they're that good that they can just do that. If they do that, they'll get beaten more often than not.
I think the interesting thing is the balance between what Swat is saying and getting players back thinking football, because it's an unbelievable achievement to win a grand final. My theory on winning a grand final is you should have the next 12 months off. You should have, the AFL should pay, because you don't get a lot of time to actually celebrate what is an unbelievable. So then there's the balance between when do you start talking about next year? I mean, when we won in 2005 was 72 years. What I guess I tried to do is actually give the players a chance to enjoy it, give the players a chance to reflect it. Because for me, I've been involved in football since 1982. I hadn't won a premiership, so it was very good for me. And again, there's no right or wrong. So I probably took the opportunity to go to this G'day LA. We played a pre-season game in Los Angeles, which was fantastic. So getting them out of that environment mentally, giving them a chance to prepare. We went back via Hawaii, and I thought that was really positive for our group because we had a pretty good group anyway. I wasn't worried about the drinking concept or the partying. I just wanted the guys to enjoy it, so reflect on it really positive, so it'd drive them again to want to do it again.
Pago called us in. We went in for the team photo after 96. I reckon he told us we had to be in there on the Tuesday. So the grand final's a sad day. Fair to say we're a little under the weather, Roosie.
And pulled us
and went right off.
Really?
Because we looked a little under the weather. And I remember sitting there going, is this bloke kidding? He was already on the Tuesday giving us a spray about maybe taking it a little bit too far.
And didn't Alistair Clarkson go and see Buddy in Las Vegas or Los Angeles, I think, a few years ago? You know, he was hearing things or whatever. So he personally flew to America to check on him. And that's the other approach, isn't it? Because Roosie is saying the players, the game's so demanding, we need time to breathe, enjoy a success. And that's what clearly Swatter and Duck did. But yeah, Clarko is trying to pull Buddy back, clearly, isn't he?
Well, I think it's knowing your group too. I mean, Yeah, look, I mean, there's a long time between the grand final and round one. So you've got to put some trust and faith in your players. But each coach knows their player group the best. And I think it gets back to your point earlier on.
Yep.
Treating each player, if you think you need to get on the plane and go and see Buddy, get on the plane and go and see Buddy. Some players you have to say, mate, go.
Yeah.
Have a drink. Yeah. You know, enjoy it. Because there's that... Clearly, they're not these two blokes here.
Can I tell you a really quick story about Dennis? When he called all the team leaders in, Swatter, you would have been in this particular meeting, and he called us all in, and he said, Swatter, your form, you've been up and down. Rocky, you're doing that. And then he just pointed at me, because this is the psychology of the man, knowing what this would do to me, knowing that I'd go, wow. And he basically said, he's the only bloke in here that can do what you blokes are doing.
And he reckoned that went down.
The rest of you, pull your heads in. Walked out, they're calling me Steve Seagal, above the law, all of this sort of stuff. So, but fair to say, because I had no one else to drink with, not pushing drinking is a
drink
bad thing. But basically he was saying that you can do what you want and these boys couldn't.
The Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
Right, the back to school quiz, where I ask you gentlemen a series of questions. You need to test your buzzers to make sure they're working. We start with you, Swatter.
Swatter.
Jay-Z.
JJ.
Yeah, or JJ. Ooh. You've shortened your buzzer this week.
Jay-Z.
Is that right?
Cost me last week.
I'm not sure you can shorten your buzzer, can you?
Swatter to JJ.
Yeah, we'll give you Jay. You're okay, Duck?
Duh.
No.
We shortened his.
Twist it again. Duck. And you, Roozy?
Bruce.
Righto, here we go. Question number one, the back to school quiz. Maths. There's some tough ones today. Which jumper number did Buddy Franklin originally wear for Hawthorn?
Swatter.
Yes, Swatter.
38?
Correct. Oh. Gee, a bit of a slow start for the boys. All right, history. Who is the most recent Test cricketer to play senior AFL, VFL football?
Swatter.
Yes.
Simon O'Donnell.
Yes, correct. Swatter, 2-0 in front. Started very well in front.
Given the fact he went like that before.
Geography. Geography. What is the moniker for the South Adelaide Football Club?
Duck. Panther.
Yes, Ducky boy. Okay. One for Ducky.
Guess. You play there?
North Adelaide Roosters.
Yeah. We go back to Anzac Day 2015. The player's name will be beeped out. Anzac Day 2015. Guess this player.
Going the barrel. Punt. High. Oh! Long. Oh! Drops a bomb. Goes with a drop punt and got all the distance and some.
Old man goes with a drop punt and gets all the distance and some.
I should know.
Well,
I called it.
You called it, Swatter.
I have no idea.
All right, no one's got that one.
What year was it?
Anzac Day 2015.
15.
You're out. This is the player.
Dustin Fletcher drops a bomb.
Fletcher
goes with a drop punt, got all the distance and some.
English. Swatter leads 2 to zip. English.
No, he's one.
Duck's one. English. How do you spell Rusciutto?
Swatter.
Yes.
RICCUITO.
Incorrect. English. How do you spell Rusciutto?
JJ. RICCIUTO.
Yes, Jay-Z. Swatter's 2. Jay-Z's 1. Duck is 1. Okay. Someone said this during the week. Who was it?
A lot of emotions. Regret. Why did I do it?
Swatter.
Yes.
Jordan Lewis.
It was indeed Jordan Lewis. 3 to a Swatter, 1
test
to
your buzzer,
Duck, 1 to Jay-Z.
No, I've got a victory last week. I'm not kidding. I'll just give you blokes a chance this week.
The history bonus round. Which club, for 2 points this one, which club has used the most players in VFL?
Duck.
AFL history. Duck.
Kangaroos.
Incorrect.
Jay
Clark.
Collingwood.
Incorrect. Which club has used the most players in VFL, AFL history?
Ruse.
Ruse.
Carlton.
Incorrect. Swatter, you've already won it, but have a guess.
Can I have another guess?
No, you can't.
Essendon.
You've got to use your buzzer.
Swatter, swatter.
Yes.
Essendon.
No. It was St Kilda with 1,585 from South Melbourne, Sydney at 1,409, Melbourne at 1,332, and Carlton in fourth. So the winner of the back-to-school quiz for week two, Wayne Schwartz.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well deserved.
And just a little bit of advice. Shopping? We might need to make the questions a bit easier for you dumbos just a little bit. Some interesting press conferences. You know, I said that I really enjoy my press conferences. Will Minson, retired from the Western Bulldogs, his name came up in the press conference last night with Luke Beveridge. You've been in a lot of different press conferences, Jay-Z. What you need to do, you need to be researched. You need to be across the situation. It can be a stressful time, the press conference.
It can be. I asked Mick Malthouse that quote, you know, did your boys come to play today? And he absolutely ripped shreds off me for the next 40 seconds. What do you mean, come to play? What do you think, we're going to sit in the car park? Do you think we're going to play marbles? What does it actually mean, come to play? So, and that still gets brought up yearly, you know, the press conference question of the year award. I get that. But this bloke, he might have me covered. I think he's got my number one title.
Would you consider bringing in Will Minson to support the other ruckman,
Campbell? It's going to be tough, mate. He's retired.
Has he had a couple of beers at halftime or something? I've asked my Perth people over there in the press conferences regularly, and he's not, this fella isn't a regular appearer. So
it may stay that way too.
Are you naming him or not?
No, he's a bit of an unknown, to be honest.
Right.
We haven't seen this guy that often.
A seat warmer.
There was
I'm not sure.
There was a young journalist during the week I heard ask Rafa congratulate him on the you know, well done, and he said, I lost the game.
I think that's happened a couple of times in the tennis tournaments, hasn't it?
I think you need to know.
There's only two in the tennis. There's only two on the court. I reckon one of the things, if you go on, I can excuse maybe the fella. There's, how many's on the senior list?
Yeah,
44. Yeah, you might have missed something.
There'd be people thinking that he might.
Rafa's playing one other person. Yeah. I reckon the critical thing, if you walk into that press conference, you want to know who won or lost.
Will Minson did send out a tweet. All I want to say is I'm fresh, well-rested and ready to go. Hashtag anything is possible thanks to the vote of confidence. Now, we don't like to talk about press conferences. Our man Troy Luff, former teammate of yours, very learned gentleman. Roosie,
roommate
you've spent
of
a lot of time.
I room with Luffy, yes.
What was he like to room with? Can talk.
He can talk. I've got some unbelievable Luffy stories.
Ones you're prepared to go with on the radio or not?
I'll need to think about one.
Okay. Well, Luffy had the job of being on the boundary on Friday night football for the Sydney versus Collingwood game. Obviously, the Pies won, so Ben Reid was very happy. He was playing at times duck on his own brother, Sam Reid. Mm-hmm. So Luffy thought he'd get himself involved with the whole family dynamic style question.
Playing on your brother. Now, I know you've probably been asked this 100 times. It just must be hard. Like, do you want him to lose? Do you want him to win? Do you want him to go well? What goes through your mind when you're playing on him?
No, I pretty much want him to go well every single week except for when we play them.
Luffy just asked him, do you want him to win or do you want him to lose?
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, well.
What do you think, Roosie, when you get asked a silly question, a presser? Do you think, I'm going to hit this bloke over the sidelines, or you have to compose yourself sometimes?
You're actually sort of prepared. I mean, based on whether you win or lose. And I mean, I always took the view that everyone's got a role to play, really. I mean, I guess it's hard. I'm going to ask you. It must be hard sometimes coming into a press conference and you know, we've lost by 60 points or whatever, or it must be difficult for you guys.
You can tell coaches get annoyed with journalists that don't.
Yeah.
They're not informed. Although it's just a question that might even be a question that they've been asked two questions ago, and then someone will repeat it and they go, well, I just answered that question.
There is an intimidation factor with some coaches. Mick Malthouse is one, Ross Lyon's the other, and you do go into those press conferences sometimes a little bit nervous because you know if you even stray just 1% off, you know, the question or say something remotely off topic or whatever bit of a cliche, you know they will absolutely
You've probably interviewed some of the biggest stars all around the world, Howie. Mm. Who's been the most intimidating to
you? Well, the true superstars are good. The Roger Federers, had a crack at me for dropping names last week, but the true superstars,
making a new segment.
All right, okay, have a listen to this then, Roosie.
I'm happy with that.
The David Beckhams, the Roger Federers, the Tiger Woods are really, really, really good to deal with. It's those guys that are just a level below that. Sebastian Vettel, really, really difficult. Michael Schumacher and Kimi Räikkönen are two of the hardest blokes I've ever had to interview. Talking about Mick Malthouse, though,
he used to be well and truly in my head when I was on the boundary at Channel 10. He had me completely psyched out, Roosie. And I remember they were playing in a finals one day and they had a couple of players out through injury. I thought, right, well, I like to be positive. I'll give him the big pump up. You know, Mick, you got a couple of players out, but the great positive, you're bringing a couple of young superstars from the VFL. And he looked at me and said, I wouldn't call them superstars. Yeah. And that was pretty much the end of the interview. So, once again, he held their mental intimidation all the way over me.
I reckon just, Jay-Z, I don't know whether you were there. There was one with Ross down at Geelong, and they played in the final. They just had a terrific win against Geelong at Geelong. They shouldn't have had to go down there.
Yeah.
They won. I think it was a pretty physical game, and I know he blew up at that press conference because someone had mentioned after the game about a couple of incidents that happened. I don't know whether you're
there. Yeah, it's a Ballantyne. I wasn't in there, but there was a Ballantyne incident.
Now,
perhaps.
I can understand, Rock. I mean, you've gone down there against the odds. You've beaten... You shouldn't have had to go down there in the first place. You've beaten a great team. And I reckon that's when coaches get a little bit no credit for winning and you go straight to... I don't mind a little bit of a build-up if you want to sort of half-whack a coach, but I reckon you've got to be respectful. So it's a two-way street because I think we have to be respectful as well of the media. And that's the way I looked at it. As I said, everyone's got a role to play, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it is a two-way street as well that I think the coaches need to be respected also.
You sort of want to bowl a couple of half volleys in the first 30 seconds so they can just lean into the cover drive.
Yeah, you've got to get one away early, a nice one, so they can whack a four. And then you can, if you want to whack one around their ears, but don't lob a hand grenade first there, Duck.
My great bugbear, though, Roosie, is when the reporter or the journalist tries to frame the person they're interviewing with an answer in the question.
Yeah.
Gee, you must be disappointed with the way you played today, Roosie, instead of the how do you feel you played today?
Yeah.
I don't know whether to... I'll give you one more name.
Is that a Steve-O special?
That is a Steve-O special. I'll give you one more name. The hardest bloke to interview in Australia, former Australian selector Rod Marsh.
Mm. Big gruff, grumpy.
Oh, gruff, grumpy. Whew. God.
Roosie was always very understanding and considerate.
No, he was always smiling.
He was a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, he was. He
Rossi
was.
Lyon, however. Oh, boy.
Great treat to welcome to Triple M Footy for the first time in 2017, the CEO of the Essendon Football Club, Xavier Campbell. Hello, Xavier. Great to see you.
Thanks, Howie.
Now, there's been so many positives to talk about the Essendon Football Club, but there's a big negative right off the top here. A big negative that some of the boys in the box may not be aware of. You've obviously had your issues in the past, but last night, I believe, you played a game of football.
Yep.
How long since you'd had a kick?
Probably 4 or 5 years.
How'd you pull up?
Not great.
Who were you playing for?
Finley Cats.
Tell me the result.
We lost by about 248 points.
Well, there you go. You've turned up and you've got robbed by how much? 248 points.
Maybe 246.
Right.
It was around
Which end of the ground were you at?
Well, the coach said to me, because I hadn't played for so long, they'd look after me.
Right.
So I started on the bench for about 3 minutes.
Yep.
Went to half forward. And he said, that's all right, we'll just leave you there and the ball's not going to come down much. And then I was loose man defence for the rest of the game.
what were your stats? Forget the result because that's not important, but did you touch the footy?
Yeah, I touched the footy and I kicked out of bounds twice. The opposition 3 or 4 times. Yeah, it was very rusty.
So, yeah, not happy with the performance?
No, I wasn't.
You think you'll go over the vision or not?
That's it.
I'll tell you what you can do because I know
you... Go over the vision.
I know he runs with Goody every week. Maybe sit down with Goody and go over the vision.
She's going to be a long tape, Roosie, when you get done by that much.
He's a very good player, two-sturt premiership centre-half back. Is that right, Xavier? So let's not underplay it. You can mark and kick the footy.
Yeah, I was only just, but back then when you used to train and actually touch the football each week, you could do a bit better job than what I did yesterday.
So how often do you just go into the coaches' meeting, Xavier? You know, Woosh has got an issue. Should we play Goddard, you know, midfield or back or forward? So, hey, just listen to me here. Do you ever have any input?
Never. Never at all. I mean, it's a classic one because I think, you know, that's what they don't want to see, coaches. I think in all seriousness, you're just trying to talk about the process, you know, make sure the strategy, they're staying firm to that. So that's really the focus most of the time.
Hey, Xavier, congratulations on the start of the Essendon Footy Club this season. It's been great images. It's been great pictures. It's been the great stories that all the Essendon fans have been looking forward to. And I think in some ways you must be indebted to your fans because I look at your membership and after everything you've been through, it's just going through the roof. So congratulations to you on the Footy Club.
Yeah, thank you. It's been clearly stating obvious. It's been a challenging 4 years for the fans in particular. And, you know, to see them, they stayed so loyal right throughout. We had 57,500 members last year. Our previous record was about 61,500, and we reached that number 100 days quicker than we did the previous time. So to be able to do that just shows they're rusted on. The loyalty is just, you know, it's incredible, really. And, you know, hopefully now we can start to reward that loyalty with really consistent performance week in, week out. You know, there'll be ups and downs. I'm sure it's a really even competition now. But the last 2 weeks, you know, we've had some good quarters, we've had some average quarters, but, you know, we've won both games, and that's hopefully something the fans definitely want to see.
A lot has been said, Xavier, about it being beneficial for the players and the coaching staff to have some clear air. But as an administrator, I mean, you've and your team have also been through a really challenging period. How important, how refreshing has it been with regards to you and your role on a day-to-day basis to have the events of the last 4 years behind you now?
Yeah, I mean, I reckon probably, you know, this time last year I was probably spending, you know, 20% of my time on normal duties of a CEO and running the business, and the other 80% was probably related to, you know, engagement with families or the players that have been suspended or, you know, other legal elements related to it, player compensation. So to reverse that now, it's probably flipped it on its head. You know, it's nice to be able to sort of think about growth and the vision and what we want to do. And we've got a, you know, a great platform out there at Tullamarine, and what we do with expansion space we've got out there. Things like that, that, you know, it's ideally you're doing that every week. We just, for 4 years or the 3.5 years I've been in charge, I haven't had that opportunity.
So do you think the events of what has happened has prepared you better?
I think any time anyone's faced with adversity and real challenge, you have to take something positive out of it. And, you know, I think I've made some good decisions. I think I've made some poor decisions throughout that. And as a football club more broadly, I think we have. But it was so unique, the circumstances that we were facing, and the sand was moving. It felt like, you know, by the hour at different points throughout it. So, you know, I think now the resilience level is certainly across the entire football club and probably even more broadly to the fans. You know, I think we've got a tremendous resilience and we've got a great resolve. And, you know, I think genuinely we probably value playing, just the opportunity to play football, more than we ever have. Because, you know, for 3 or 4 years, 4 and a bit years, there was always this sort of shadow behind us. And that's what you want, you know, not just for Essendon fans, but more broadly for the football public. You know, just, it was an issue that went on for far too long. And I think, you know, rightly now we're focusing on football. And I think that's for everyone's betterment.
I think for us as footy fans too, I mean, it's been terrific. I mean, regardless of what club you're with or what role you play, I mean, we're all football fans, and geez, it was tough for everyone to see what the players went through. Just maybe your role as the players came back into the club. I think we had a chance to speak to Trav Collier last week or the week before, and he gave us an insight into John, you know, and getting the player group together. But, I mean, it's obviously big for you as the CEO too. Well, suddenly you've got a lot of players walking back into the football club. How did you handle that? And just maybe take us through the process of that.
Yeah, it sort of became a real priority, and priority for me as the most senior executive in the business. There was different layers that we wanted to communicate with the players, but, you know, I guess for us, we had to, because everything changed so quickly overnight for them, they were preparing for a season to then literally preparing for 12 months out of the game. It was about trying to find purpose for them away from football and trying to make the most of what was a really unfortunate opportunity that they'd had in front of them. And that's, you know, I personally spent, you know, a couple nights a week I would have dinner with a different player that was suspended, just only ever one-on-one. I didn't do it in groups.
Job included,
yeah. And at times when he's overseas, would be calls. It was more about helping them network, helping them with their study, helping set up what was hopefully going to be something that was purposeful for the year. We didn't really talk football at all. That was, you know, John would talk football and give updates of where we're at, a high level. And ultimately, we didn't want to put pressure on them about making a decision to come back and play. And we said to them all really early, regardless of their contractual status, if you want to go, we understand. And I think that was important that they knew that, and took the sort of pressure out of it for them as well. And then, you know, gradually over time, we had players, and a lot of people played a big part. And we were really a support act, because the real strength was the players themselves and their relationships, and probably seeing the hope on field. And obviously against Melbourne was, you know, the value of that win last year, the march of the fans and the win, that was so powerful with that suspended group, and we were very lucky to have that. So, you know, realistically, it's, you know, it took some time, but then you got different points where someone like Carl Hooker could have gone anywhere he wanted to as a free agent, and the fact that he made a decision really early in the piece, regardless of where his player compensation was at, regardless of the big offers that were put in front of him, he made a decision to stay at the football club. And I think, so, you know,
what do you think drove that? Because that, I mean, you always need that domino effect, don't you? You need that player, that one player that comes out and says, yeah, in a pretty traumatic time for everyone. What was the thing that you felt that meant his signature? I mean, it's very important, but why do you think he signed so early?
I think he, he felt a genuine care and, you know, an empathy from the club's perspective, because we, you know, we made that mistake. They shouldn't have been put in that position, and it was our fault. It was the club's fault. And you know, I think that they understood that. They understood that we'd done an enormous amount to change the football club. I think they brought into a vision of what John was bringing to the football club, and what his shared vision for the football club was. But, you know, ultimately, I think the strength of the relationships of those players, you know, to not leave it there, to not go and play their football in different clubs, to actually continue the journey together, I think that was the major factor for them.
We're speaking to Xavier Campbell, the Essendon CEO, and a man that got belted by 248 points last night. And here is Wayne Carey.
On to now, it'd be fair to say that through that adversity, you find a player like McDonald, Tip and Woody last year. You got Fantasia, who has just been unbelievable. The fact that you're able to have that year and blood these young kids that wouldn't have got the opportunity otherwise has just made your club all the stronger.
Yeah, I think from that adversity there comes opportunity, and that was one of the silver linings last year. And it was, you know, you laugh about the 248 points last night, but, you know, Finley, as a footy club with a big exodus of players, they're in a very similar position this year where they have to redefine what success looks like. And that's what we had to do last year. It wasn't going to necessarily be about the wins and losses. It was going to be about, you know, we set goals at the start of the year that here's our best 22, including, you know, the players that are suspended. And by the end of the year, we want to bring at least four players that weren't in that best 22 into it with those players that were suspended as well. And that was the Fantasias and the Tip and Woodies and, you know, the Parishes that got games, you know, in prime positions, key positions a lot of the time, either run with or they were, you know, on ball or for some of them, and, you know, taking the best forward. And that was stuff that, you know, Ruse has probably gone through that in Melbourne when he first took over, was giving those players the opportunity. And I think that definitely was one of the few positives to come from a really difficult situation. So, yeah, that was a good thing.
How critical was it to have John Worsfold as a, yeah, I mean, going through a tough time, to have him as a senior coach, and not that I know John really, but he's a really stable person, a really calm person. How critical was that to have him as coach?
Oh, it was enormous. And I remember, you know, I spoke about mistakes before, but I think, you know, at the start I sort of said to him in the process, you know, there's a very, very small chance this could happen. Highly unlikely. We don't expect it to happen. He's most likely outcome of the CAS decision. And clearly what happened was the absolute worst and probably even worse than that. And he just was calm the entire time. And he found a quick way to find the positives out of it whilst still being empathetic to the position that those players were in, and to bring people with him. Because you know, he was very lucky. Rob Kerr, as head of football, was a great support as well. But, you know, I didn't spend much time in the football department last year. That was up to those guys to build those KPIs, to motivate them to sort of play their football and be happy and enjoy their football. And I think they did that. And he's calm, he's collected, he's process-driven. He's very much about the entire club, the whole of club, which I think is really important. It was really important for us as a football club where we're at and where we're trying to go. And, you know, we've only made a small step forward. Because realistically, you get through the issue, we're now just even with the rest of the competition. We've got to keep driving that forward now, and we've got a lot of hard work. But I think he's a great person, that role.
Former coach James Hird, back writing columns with the Herald Sun Xavier. Have you spoken to him since his health incident a month or two ago now? And is there an invite for him to come back to the footy club?
No, I haven't spoken to him recently. I've spoken to people closer to him now as well. I mean, for James and for others that were involved, you know, David Evans came back the other week. I mean, James is a past player. I mean, you know, he had very significant past player in our history, and invitations and extensions of invitations always exist for that group. And that's probably something for James, really, in his time when he feels comfortable about coming back to our football club, really.
And you spoke earlier of the player compensation deals. I think the last update, you had finalised or signed off on 30 of those 34, and Jake Carlisle was proving difficult. What's the further update there? Have you got all 34, and how are you going with Carlisle?
No, we've got a couple to go, sort of without going to specifics, because obviously, you know, the confidentiality of that process is pretty important. You know, we're nearly there, and that's been of all the things we worked on over the last few years, that was one that posed, you know, a lot of challenges given the unique nature and the complex nature of past players, current players, employer, and obviously the legal element. So, you know, we're nearly there, and we sort of had hoped to try and get that done by the start of the season, but, you know, it does require a lot of work both on our behalf and their behalf to get the relevant information in. So I feel like it's progressed pretty well, and fingers crossed we can get to a point where we have a full resolution.
And lastly, two big free agents in the pool this year. It's Dustin Martin, it's Nat Fyfe. Is it Would you expect your list manager to be having chats with their agents to find out their intentions and availability potentially for next year?
Yeah, so long as it fits the list model. I think, you know, with players like that, there's probably always an opportunity, isn't there, really? And, you know, I think
to be having that chat.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why you wouldn't explore and understand where they sit, where their intentions are and things like that. That's just natural. We've seen that come our way as well, particularly over the last few years with the challenges that we've had and the, you know, I guess a perceived vulnerability about where our list sat. But ultimately that would then feed back into the list management committee, and you know, where it sits with your broader strategy will be obviously a determining factor as to how hard you push and whether you make formal offers and things like that, and we're a long way from that position.
Just before we let you go, back to the big issue, are you playing next week for Finley?
I said after the game that that would be it.
So after a 250-point belting, you are leaving them in the lurch. Is that what you're telling
248
me?
248.
Oh, sorry. Xavier, thanks for having a chat with us, mate. Best of luck to you and the Bombers. You're going
absolutely beautifully. I want to know who wins out of him and Goody round the tan.
Okay. Who wins?
No, Goody by a long way.
What type of time?
We run together. We actually, he's probably got a lot more in the tank than what I have, though.
What type of time are we looking at?
Oh, we're not. There's a lot more talk these days.
Okay.
All right. Well done.
They're both in good nick.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Hey, there's an issue at North Melbourne, intriguing in regards to their rucks, because we saw yesterday down in Tassie that Braden Pruce was used as the number one ruckman fella. So Todd Goldstein's been arguably one of the premier ruckmen in the competition in recent years, but Braden Pruce, the former car washer, former labourer, was used as the main man in there against Mumford, and he shoved Mumford around physically like we possibly haven't seen. So it's an unusual move from Scotty, but I think it was the right one. Now, the statistics are interesting. Pruce had 26 hit-outs, Duck, 9 marks and 2 goals versus Goldie, 10 hit-outs, only 2 marks and 1 gold. And for me, this throws up a really interesting question about who is the main man there, and beyond this season, who might be expendable? Because like we saw Rory Lobb at GWS last year, come from the clouds, West Coast, various clubs clambering for him in the trade market. If Pruce becomes the main man at North, does a club like GWS now go for Goldstein? Now, the background for this is Josh Kelly's been offered a 9-year, $9 million deal at GWS by North Melbourne. So North Melbourne want Josh Kelly, and that to me is a lifetime deal, one very hard to walk away from. Does North then dangle the Todd Goldstein carrot to GWS? So he goes North to GWS, becomes the next Shane Mumford, and Josh Kelly comes into North Melbourne. But from a coaching perspective, and Duck as well, what do you think is going on here? Is this just a matchup thing, or is there a passing of the baton?
Well, I'm not sure of his preparation or whether he's clearly...
I think he's fit.
Okay, well, I did notice, yeah, I didn't obviously see the game. I was doing another game yesterday, but notice that he started forward, kicked the first goal of the game.
Goldie.
Yeah, Goldie, that is. Look, he's the All-Australian, one of the Brownlow favourites 2 years ago. Can certainly play the game. Once again, without being inside the Kangaroos' four walls and knowing exactly where he's at with his body, you probably can't make comment on all of those other things that you mentioned about, you know, possibility of him leaving. Well, they are. It's always a possibility for players to be traded. And what it does do, as you said, it gives other players the opportunity, and clearly they've grabbed hold of that.
I think the difficulty is with the two ruckmen now. I mean, if you're looking at, if you can't kick goals and put pressure on as a forward ruckman, it's too hard to play both of them. You know, look at Richmond's revitalisation on the back of three smalls, three speedy players that can bring the ball. Yep. So if you're not marking it, and again, I was a bit like Duck, I did a different game, so I didn't see, I saw bits and pieces of that game. So I'm not sure, can Goldie play as a forward?
No,
maybe not.
Yeah, but I don't think so. So then it begs to, what happens over the next 3 or 4 weeks, I think it's going to be telling as to who assumes the number one ruck mantle there.
Richmond have copped a lot of flack, fellas, for their trading and their drafting. But they have absolutely nailed it with their moves late last year. So they use pick 6 to bring in Dion Prestia and Josh Caddy. Effectively, pick 6 goes out, they get those two midfielders. And in what might be the trade of last year, they swap pick 45 for Toby Nankervis. Yep. Now, I think his impact on this footy club in the first month, Duck, has been enormous. I think it's the trade of the season.
Oh, I think he's been absolutely brilliant. He marks the footy, he competes, he reads the ball really well, he gets forward. I love the... look, any ruckman that can mark the footy, I think that straight away you get a tick from me. In actual fact, if you can't mark it, you probably... obsolete, but he is a beauty, and I think his first three rounds have been very, very good.
I think what we're seeing Jay-Z now is last year, and I'm guessing a little bit, last year you were able to get some reasonable players for back-end picks. Mm. I think the market has freed up.
Yep. Mitchell and Lewis. Yep.
Yeah, Mitchell and Lewis.
Cloak.
I think Soss did a terrific job of getting some GWS kids for not much, some early draft picks. You know, Plowman, Marchbank, I can't remember exactly what they... But I think what we're seeing is, and my point being, I think if you have an astute list manager and astute recruiting, I think you can make some reasonable moves, which will then result on some, you know, up the ladder, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 places. So I think the market has freed up, probably as a result of free agency a little bit. The Boyd thing was huge. Now, he wasn't a free agency. Paddy Dangerfield. So the market seems to have been freed. I think the astute list managers and recruiters are going to be able to do pretty significant things for their footy team.
And finally, we see Bryce Gibbs today looking at Carlton. They were probably a bit better against Melbourne and might have even won. But what must he think watching Adelaide last night? They're almost the premiership favourite, or certainly right up there. I think the boys on the Sunday Footy Show this morning were talking as being the premiership favourite. How difficult must it be for Bryce Gibbs out there today in a struggling Carlton side when the club he could have gone to is going so well?
I don't think it even would cross his mind.
He wouldn't watch last night and think, I wish I was there.
Oh, he might still wish he was living back in Adelaide for family reasons, but I don't think he would be right now. And I think one of the great things about Bryce Gibbs, and if you listen to people in the first three rounds, the way he's applied himself and the way he's played certainly says that he's not thinking about anyone other than Carlton. And I think that shows what sort of team man that he is. And he's been a very, very consistent footballer, Roosie.
Yeah, I really like him.
He's never finished out of the top five, I think it is, in their best and fairest in every year that he's played there. He's been very, very good.
And he's done some good roles. Oh, I think, Jay-Z, it's more around the conversation between the two clubs. It's more around, because it swings and roundabouts in footy. The teams that become, and I'm not suggesting, because I don't know, I'm not suggesting Adelaide were difficult or Carlton were difficult. What I'm saying is, for me, it's less about Bryce Gibbs, because I think that looks after itself. But what did Adelaide promise Bryce Gibbs' manager? Mm. What were the discussions between the list manager? Because at some point, you're in the same industry together, you have to get along well, and I can only talk about the relationships that I had with Matty Rendell when he was at Adelaide. Ross Lyon was at St Kilda. And if you've got good relationships with people, you can actually add talent because you're prepared to talk. Is that relationship between that club, that manager, fractured because those relationships broke down? Mm. I still don't understand exactly why Bryce Gibbs didn't end up at Adelaide.
Well, they wanted 2 first-round draft picks, Carlton. I think absolutely Adelaide will try again to get him again at the end of this year.
Triple M rocks footy.